you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
I am so excited for today's interview because we are digging into the brain. And as those of you in my community know, I find the brain and how it works and fascinating. A part of that is because I think if we understand it, we can actually leverage it and use it to our advantage and to our team and our company's advantage. I think half the reason we don't get what we need or we get friction in ourselves in the workplace is because we don't understand how we work as humans. So I'm excited for today's guest because she's going to provide some insight here. So Kate, please take a minute to introduce yourself to the Inside Launch Street, all these everyday innovators in the tribe.
Fantastic. Lovely. Thank you, Tamara, very much. Hi, everybody. My name is Kate Lanz, and I'm a neuropsychologist. I work as a leadership coach, an organizational psychologist, and I've also spent some time working in large corporations myself in the first part of my career. And I've just written a book about what we're going to be talking about today in terms of brain gender difference.
So I put the book in the description on the live, which is All the Brains in the Business, the Gendered Brain in the 21st Century Organization. So I didn't have my glasses on, so hopefully I got that right.
You did.
What is one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
Gosh. One thing maybe, I've lived all over the world, and in the last 15 years I've lived in 6 different countries.
Wow.
And lived and worked in those 6 different countries. So really, really cool actually to have experienced that.
You have a favorite place that you lived? I don't want to throw all the other ones under the bus. But
That's a really tricky one. I think I'd call out Peru actually as a wonderful country to live in. Great culture, amazing food, some of the best food in the world.
What is it called? Pisco Sours?
Oh my word. The first one, delicious. The second one, equally delicious. The third one, try standing up.
You know what's happening, yeah. I took a boat trip on the Amazon on the Peru side.
And fantastic.
It was an amazing eye-opening trip for a lot of reasons, and we drank a lot of Pisco Sours.
Good for you.
A little something you know. To your point, like, I'm not sure after the third you know what's happening. All right, I wrote my questions down, so bear with me as I look down, audience. I wanted to make sure to ask the questions in the right way because we are kind of digging into some really fascinating stuff. And Kate, I think part of the reason I'm excited about this is this thing between our ears is so elusive to so many of us. And like I said in the opening, to have some insight into how it works really does help us understand ourselves and the people around us. So let's start with the science. What are the major differences from a science perspective between the female and male brains? And I think most importantly for kind of this conversation, how does that show up at work?
Yeah, great. Well, it was really getting into those differences that made me want to write the book, because as I was getting into my research within organizations, it was like, everybody needs to know this. It's so helpful. So, I mean, there are about 100 differences between the male and female brains. I think an experience with my own research, I think about 30 of those are noteworthy for leaders to know and understand. And I think I would call out kind of 3 main things to share today. The first is the way the neural connectivity is different. So the actual patterning when we're thinking about stuff is quite different between the male and female brain. And there was some very interesting research that came out of the University of Pennsylvania in 2014. And I don't know if everyone can see this, but I just wanted to share that with you. Yeah, so the top brain here, the one with the blue patterning, that is a male brain. And the one underneath it with the orange is the female brain. And you can see here that the connectivity in the male brain goes predominantly front to back inside each hemisphere. So the hemispheres are operating more separately. The female brain, you can see that the patterning is going very actively across between hemispheres. So very different neural connectivity. And I'll talk in a moment about what that means. But that's the first big difference that I'd like to call out. The second one is the difference in hormone levels. So male brains and bodies have a lot more testosterone than female brains and bodies. And testosterone is the hormone that tends to promote competition, aggression. Female brains and bodies contain a lot more oxytocin, which is like the bonding hormone, the connectivity, collaboration hormone. So there are different neurobiological set points. And then the third thing I'd like to call out, and I'll talk about how this then shows up at work, is different stress reactions. So under stress, male and female responses are different. So male brains will increase their testosterone levels. Female brains will increase their oxytocin levels. So those are just, you know, three of the 30 differences that I think are interesting to understand as a business leader. So what does that mean? First of all, it's important to say that our brains, it's not binary. It's not like all men's brains are like this and all women's brains are like that. Absolutely. It's far more subtle and sophisticated than that. And you can actually measure the sex of your brain. But on average, the tendency is for men's focus and attention to be more from information in to coordinated action out. And you might get that kind of fix it, more narrow task focus. Women's brains, because of the connectivity patterning combined with the hormonal differences, will tend to be more iterative and emergent in the way that they pay attention and solve problems. And that could show up in a whole variety of ways. Like sometimes women are considered more verbose and they need longer airtime to express their ideas. So that can be a thing that happens at work. And basically what I'm trying to share with people is, what are the differences? How do you figure out what kind of sex brains you've got in your own team and own organizations? And how can you leverage the best of the differences? Because the different take on the world is a really potent source of competitive advantage.
Let me ask you a question about a few things that you said. So the first question I have is, when you think about friction in the workplace, like I can see how with some of my male colleagues, maybe I get a little bit of friction with them because they kind of, in what you're saying, right? Like I present a challenge and they go right to solution and I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And I guess part of me goes, oh, I'm not smart enough, right? Like a little bit of my self-doubt, and that's my own baggage, like self-doubt comes in. But part of it also is it causes a little bit of friction between us of like, well, I hear what you're saying, but I want to look here and here, which is kind of the thing. So how do you think about, I mean, actually, I guess what I'm saying is part of me, when you say that, makes me go, oh, that's why he does that. And now I can give him
absolutely
I'm not trying to like talk over me. Just his path is, like, to your point, kind of coordinated out, or my path is to be more so how do we, knowing that information, work better together and leverage that together?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is to actually have the knowledge, understand what the actual brain sex differences are. So, raise your self-awareness, educate yourself, and I'll give you some examples in a moment. And then the second thing is to work in brain-friendly ways that allow the best of all the brains in the room or in the business to show up. And I'll just show you a little bit about how the brain evolved. So here's my brain. Actually, it's not my brain. I'd be very pleased if it is, would be, because it's like twice the size of a normal brain. So the brain evolved in three phases. This is like the reptilian brain, which is the most ancient part, and that does all the automatic stuff. Reptiles laid eggs, no relationship with the offspring. when mammals came on stream about 65 million years ago, this middle part, the emotional part of the brain, evolved, and that part allows relationship to occur. So it doesn't actually think, but it's the seat of primal emotions that keep us alive. And it's about 65 million years old. Much later, the prefrontal cortex evolved. That's about 220,000 years old. So the brain basically works bottom up. Mm-hmm. With the limbic brain coming on stream, the emotional brain coming on stream inside 85 milliseconds. So we've responded emotionally.
Yeah, without even realizing it.
Without even realizing. The rational brain comes on stream at 250 milliseconds. So three times more slowly. So the bottom line is we are emotional way before we're rational. And we have to take that into account. So any way of approaching getting the best of all the brains in your business, you have to work kind of bottom up. And so you have to soothe the emotional brain first, because it will activate. So if you've got some friction going on, and I can give you an example of this, you have to settle that down first before you can allow the cortex to start thinking and doing the clever stuff.
Right.
And so if you've got some brain sex differences showing up in the meeting, because there might be a guy with a very male brain who's thinking, crikey, you know, when is this woman going to just get to the point?
Right. Why do you have to drive to solution so fast?
Yeah, absolutely. And she's wanting to pull on more and different kind of contextual data before she begins to put her ideas out there. You need to just soothe the limbic system down first. So, and that involves acknowledging the person's made a contribution, pointing out where the conversation is going, putting into the room your new idea, and describing what this could look like when you're partnering really effectively. So that's one of the models that I talk about in the book, which is the rich model: recognition, intention, challenge plus solution, and then hope. How do we paint a picture of us working, partnering together?
So I love that. And what I love that acronym, that's right. And I'll tell you, one of the things I talk about in my work in innovation, because I agree with you, the primal brain, the lizard brain, whatever you want to call it, reacts so much faster than we realize. And then it drives our thinking and our behaviors. Yeah. We know what's happening. One of my favorite things to do when people set me off, and by set me off, I mean like, you know, I had that moment of fight or flight without even knowing what's happening, is I like to say to them, interesting, tell me more about that. Or what do you mean by that?
So it fabulous.
It forces me to take another 10 seconds, calm down, to your point, to let my rational brain actually click into gear. And I've actually learned the process, because they want a few layers deeper.
Yeah.
So you were talking about like all the brains in the room. And I'm curious, because oftentimes, let me say it differently. One of the things that I believe very strongly is tapping the power of diversity of thinking in the room. And we
absolutely
perspective, that we all innovate differently, right? We all don't do it the same way. And I love kind of layering on what you're saying with the brain. When you think about a group of people together, all with these different kind of connective patterns in their brain, how do you guide your leaders to tap all of those brains in a way that isn't feeling like, oh my God, I need a cheat sheet every time I go into the room? Like, what's one good tip for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the brain basically has, and this is massively oversimplifying, obviously, but two distinct modes of operating that has to do with the emotional brain and the thinking brain. So one is when we're in thrive, which is we're in the zone. It's like, you know, you're just on it. You're thinking well, the ideas are flowing, you feel connected, it's all good. And the energy just keeps going. So that's thrive mode. The second mode is the survive mode, which is like driving with the handbrake on, and it's, you know, you're trying to go forward, but it's just not working, and it's exhausting. And the neurochemistry attached to those two different states is vastly different. Now, needless to say, when one is being innovative, when a team is being innovative or a business, you've got a lot of the thrive neurochemistry in play. So dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin. And so as a leader, because we are emotional way before we're rational, the big thing is to create thrive in people's brains and bodies on purpose. so cause the emotional response on purpose rather than inadvertently or by accident, whereby those people can settle down and think well. And you can only really do that if you understand brain gender or brain diversity, because each brain needs something different in order to get into that flow mode.
Let me ask you a question on this, and this might be an either obvious or overly simplified question, but go with me. Sometimes, as the leader of a team, I go into a room and I can tell they're not in thrive for whatever reason, right? The mood in the room.
Yeah.
Five people in the room, the 2,000 people in the room, or whatever. Yeah. They're not there. So what can I do to shift that energy? And really their brain emotion, right? I mean, that's actually the science that we're talking about, not just the like fluffy energy in the room.
Yeah.
What can I do to shift that? Because I think, right, you've had it too, Kate, right? Where you go into a meeting and you're like, or even if it's just one-on-one and you can tell on the other side is not in the flow state.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So obviously it's situation dependent. However, you have to settle down the limbic system first before you do anything. Otherwise, the person cannot think. The energy won't be flowing to the cortex, either at all or not enough. So depending on the situation, the first thing I would do is seek to connect. So if someone's very upset, it would be like, oh gosh, how are you? What's going on for you? Yeah, so that they feel seen and validated and understood. And they might want to, tell you what the problem is and just spend some time on that before you get into a different conversation about the work task. So that would be on a more sort of one-to-one level. In a group, I think probably something similar, just in terms of, let's just take a pause here and reconnect, where are we all at? Because without that connection at the beginning, where people know that they're safe, you're flogging a dead horse, really. You've got to settle the limbic system down. The other thing that you can do is just change the state. So one of the 8 primal emotions is surprise. And so you can surprise people. And I had a client do it the other day. She had been in a really tough meeting about lockdown with the CEO of the organization. She wanted to get the organization working from home, working virtually. He wanted them to stay in the building longer, and very dominant character. And she stood up to him and really took him by surprise in front of other people and sort of spoke truth to power, having already done some analysis. So she it wasn't touchy-feely. She was demonstrating what the impact would be to the productivity of the business. And in fact, that really worked. So she leveraged the potentiator emotion to create a thrive environment.
So that's interesting. This is great. This is great advice, just to hold on to surprise for a second. So one of the things when I work with groups, even online or in person, is I have them do this exercise. I call it draw a stranger. They basically have to take 90 seconds to draw someone they don't know in the room. And it shocks people to be out of the gate to do that exercise. And then they lighten up and they laugh. And there's a lot of energy, and there's lessons that come out of it about how we layer on judgments. But I'm kind of wondering right now if by accident part of the reason that works to set up a phenomenal session for the rest of the time is because I surprised them. So whatever mood they were in before, I can open it up. And I don't know that I realize that, but what a powerful for leaders out there reminder that to like just sometimes just come in and be like, bam, like really get people out of whatever they're in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think what you're doing there with that lovely, I like the exercise a lot tomorrow, but what you're doing, it goes surprise, delight, and you're building trust. So when we're in thrive, we've got oxytocin flowing. And because you've surprised them, so you've taken them out of their state and you've got them connected with somebody else in the room because they're drawing them. And that's quite a kind of fun but intimate thing to do.
Yeah, right.
And so it's building trust, and oxytocin is the bonding hormone. So it's the hormone of trust. Uh-huh. So in that little activity, you've got the potentiator, which is surprise, and then you're tipping them into a higher likelihood of creating some kind of relationship with someone else in the room, which builds trust. Yeah. So that would be oxytocin.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's funny. I mean, that was by accident on my part, but in some ways, but that's fascinating to understand. And I think gives you as a leader a little bit more confidence to do those things, because you know what you're really tapping into is the science behind the brain, not just trying to pull up, which I think is a little scary to do. I want to ask you, I'm going to jump ahead in my questions because we're talking about kind of getting people out of mood and and I think one of the things that we're dealing with right now more than we have in, God, I don't know, I'm 47 in my lifetime, is the stress and the distraction of crisis. I mean, we've got this combination of coronavirus, which, let's face it, like, we've been on lockdown for a long time now. And even if we're coming out of it, we've still got all the stressors of it that have, you know, been building up over the last 3 months, kind of moving into, at least in the U.S., an incredible historical moment of transformation, which is so powerful and wonderful and heavy. So how do you think about leading the brain, particularly in times of crisis? Because we are not coming out of, I think, and I'd love to hear your perspective on this, but even as we shift through the stages, I don't think we as individuals are coming out of crisis mode anytime soon. We're still dealing with a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's really, really important. This is why understanding the science is so helpful. So because of the situation that we're in, the pandemic, it's a marathon. This is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And it holds huge possibilities for positive change as well. And you have to manage your mind in order to be able to access the positive change. So basically, brains don't like sudden change.
Right. And this was like...
Yeah, absolutely. But what brains are is brilliant at adapting. So you have to keep supporting your brain, because we will be on high alert, because the pandemic is not going away anytime soon. So you've got to have like micro practices that you use all the time to keep soothing the limbic system and promoting the cortex to think creatively and access the best of our collective intelligence. So that needs to be done on a sort of moment by moment basis for oneself, so that you can feel when you're in survive or thrive. And if you find yourself in survive, take a little moment to put your nervous system back into thrive. And you can do that by managing your mood, managing your motivation, and helping your brain to keep adapting. And that might be some really simple things like listening to a piece of music that you love, going for a walk in nature. Our brains love the green and they love the sight of water. So anything that restores your nervous system quickly. If you're in the middle of a meeting, actually breathing in nice, even breaths in and even breaths out for just over a minute, and you can do that in silence so no one knows you're doing it, that will put your brain, your nervous system back into a thrive state. But it's really important, like, to micromanage your state. And then at a sort of slightly bigger level, to keep creating the context whereby the brains in that conversation can be in thrive. And that's, you know, what I'm talking about in the book is a couple of models. I've talked about the rich model, but that help the brain to do that and to develop the habits around that, because we are massive creatures of habit. So we have to develop positive new habits as we manage ourselves. And I think the final thing I would say on that point, Tamara, is don't panic if you have a panic. You know, this is a pandemic. Our brains are finely tuned to trigger and to survive. So we will all have wobbles at funny moments, and they'll kind of freak us out. But it's like, don't worry about those wobbles, because they're natural.
Can I share something a little personal for a minute?
Sorry,
but I think it relates directly to what you're saying. About a week ago, I was at a friend's house and I was triggered by a scent in her house, and I railed her for the scent. And late, it was silly. It was so silly. Like, it's just embarrassing and silly. Like, I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. Silly. What do I care? I don't live there. Right. But I think in 2019, had I walked in and that scent like set me off, because it reminds me of a negative like thing, right? It's kind of what happened. I am self-aware enough to be like, that's me, right? And my emotions kind of responding to this scent. Mm. Well, in the times we're in, I didn't even realize it, and I lashed out. And it wasn't until 24 hours later that I woke up in the morning and was like, I'm a jerk. I cannot believe I let my emotions drive my behavior. And I guess I'm bringing that up because part of what I hear you saying is in this micromanaging, which I'm really intrigued by, because it's not about waiting until like you boil over. I don't think if you met me 2 hours prior to that, you would have said, tomorrow's on the edge. You know, I was normal, just am triggered way faster and more deeply than I've ever been. So I guess I'd love to hear a little bit more about that kind of micromanaging your emotions, your behavior to get into Thrive, to not wait till you're a frog in boiling water. Like, and that moment just, I know it sounds a little silly, but I think that that's kind of how it shows up and work in life is these like triggers that set you off. And it's not till after that you go, oh, I can't do that.
Yeah, no, that's a great example, Tamara. And it, you know, it's like your limbic brain was responding, the emotional brain. Oh. The cortex kind of woke up and just thought, what was all that about? Yeah. That and we're so much closer to the surface now because of everything that's going on. And so what I would encourage people to do, and obviously if you're a leader, a lot of your job is to create the emotional context that people can perform within. Yeah. And you can only do that if you're in good shape yourself. So it's like really noticing, what is it? What do I notice in my body when I'm getting tense and stressed? Where does that show up for me? So that you become like hyper aware of your own stress triggers, survive triggers. And as soon as you feel them, do something about it. So for me, I have a particular piece of Mozart that will just, as soon as I hear it, whew, my whole nervous system settles down. And I'll do that immediately.
Just real quickly, because I was studying some NLP stuff.
Right.
For me, it's like the squeeze of the hand makes me smile about what I do now. But you can train, I guess why I'm asking this is, I just want to give people hope that like, you can train yourself into that, right? Into like
Absolutely. You can, and 46% of our day is spent doing habitual behaviors. Our brain is absolutely wired for habit because that conserves energy. So if you're trying to shift a habit, which is to get better at managing your survive triggers, then just create some simple things that you can do and do them many times during the day. And you will really notice the difference within a remarkably short space of time. And we need to keep doing it. You know, this is a marathon. So we've got to keep being kind to ourselves and come up with simple things that help us our nervous systems to settle down.
So thank you for kind of, I dove in that a little bit sooner than I expected to. What we were talking about kind of led to that. And I think right now as business leaders, it's so important that we recognize that there's this like undercurrent for all of us their teams that is a layer of stress that we're just carrying around right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really mean things to people like I did. I've since apologized, by the way. I immediately apologized.
Still friends, I hope.
Very good friends. I apologized instantly when I realized what I had done. I want to take it back to the corporate level or kind of just organizational level for a second. Because we've got these diverse brains. We've got this different type of wiring. How do you combine the male brain strengths, as you talk about in your book, so knocking out tasks, competitive focus, with the female strength of more collaborative agility, multitasking, enhanced memory? How do we do that to shore up and kind of give our business the competitive advantage?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing is to really recognize that there are profound neurobiological differences. The way those will show up will be intensely personal, but it's not about making everybody sort of equal. It's about using the differences. So to really consciously choose to notice what the brain differences are that you have in your top team, across your business, and to actively put in place. So it's like a willingness to see it, and then the push to educate people about the differences, and then to put in place some simple work practices. I mean, as you were saying, Tamara, you know, leaders are busy people who are trying to do a lot on limited resources, time being one of them. And so that's what I'm trying to help people do with the models that I've put in the book. One is for running meetings, one is for communicating, but they kind of meter up and down depending on how you need them. So just create simple brain-friendly ways of going on. And then you will get the best of all the brains. But people knowing what the brain sex differences are in a particular team is really helpful. So in one instance, I had in a financial institution, and one of the MDs after we'd done the work, he sent a message to a female managing director just to say, hey, you know what, I'm really sorry. I always thought you were coming at stuff in a slightly weird way, and I was discounting your opinion. And he said, now I get why you're coming at stuff from a different point of view. And actually, I want your opinion. I want to, you know, actively understand what it is that you think. And so just the knowledge of you know, the patterning and some of the other differences enabled them to have a completely different kind of conversation.
I think there's a lot of, I've seen, not just think, there's a lot of power in recognizing the diversity of thinking around you. It makes the friction actually your strength.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It needs friction. It needs challenge. Group think doesn't help. Birds of a feather ideas tend to die.
Yeah.
The organizations that follow that path. So here's my question I'm curious about, because we see this a lot in innovation where the structures and the milestones don't actually match up to the efforts for innovation we're putting in. So what I mean by that is, I'll give you a very kind of couple minor examples. Maybe the milestone for a new product idea out of the gate, I've seen this in the consumer goods world over and over again, is the same milestone that a established brand has. And it makes no sense, right? Because that gives them more time to grow.
Yeah.
So the way the team is set up actually silos everybody versus creating real collaboration.
Yeah.
When you think of it from your perspective and this kind of, you know, the different brains and how they work together, are companies getting it right? Are they kind of accidentally kind of promoting one type of brain thinking and not another?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what my research is finding tomorrow, that some of the big cultures are suited to a certain type of brain that tends to be at the more male end of the brain sex spectrum, which means it's missing out on a lot of the female brains and a lot of the males with more female brains. So if you drew the two distribution curves, you would see that it was brains at this end of the spectrum that were being better served and better suited and more often put into thrive by the general ways of going on. And so if you're really serious about innovation, you need to your point there, you need to get a bunch of very diverse brains into a room and get them thinking about what are the milestones? How are we going to measure them? Because you get what you focus on. And so one of the things that I help organizations think about is, how are you recruiting? How are you promoting? How are you coaching? How are you retaining your talent? And if you're doing that in a way that is not really genuinely open to all of the brains. So one of the things I find is that companies are really committed to hiring diversity, but then they don't know how to include the actual brains, the diverse brains that they have. And so they've got them in the room. It's like being at a party, but you don't actually get asked to dance.
Which actually is, I would say, has a double negative impact, because then you're asked but not contributing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So you're there but you daren't contribute, or you're not invited to contribute. Yeah.
Yeah, I really kind of, particularly this part of the conversation, appreciate it, because so what we find in innovation is, if I'm a leader and I, you know, so we have an innovation assessment that tells you your style of innovation. What we find is, whatever the leader's style, there's 9 triggers, 9 ways, but whatever the style is of the leader, the trap we fall into, and I've made this mistake, is, well, if you, Kate, don't do it the way I do it, I don't see your work in innovation. And not true in any way whatsoever. Now, if I can flip that and understand that you coming at something differently actually strengthens both of us, and you have perspectives I don't have, we all win.
Absolutely.
Sounds like that's really what you're saying here, is you got to take those differences. You're not trying to get to conformity. You're trying tap the differences and leverage them. And I have to imagine that when teams recognize this, to your kind of example earlier about the person that emailed the other person, they're probably also leads to a lot more vulnerability and trust, ability to take risks, psychological safety in the workplace.
Absolutely.
Have to elevate with it when you're more open to different approaches.
Exactly. And when you can kind of look under the hood, if you like, and see some of the differences in neurobiology, and then the individual differences in terms of the brain sex scores that people might have in an individual team, you know, that's the science. Those are real differences. It's always a combination of nature and nurture. But it's not. It just makes it much more understandable, and it explains it much more clearly. And anything we can understand better is just less scary, and we can welcome it in.
I got a question from a Facebook person, so I'm going to ask it to you.
Sure.
The question was actually something you said earlier, and it's funny, I wrote it down, which is why I was taking notes, about the brain doesn't like immediate change, but it likes to adapt over time. So their question. Got it on the DM. thank you for asking, is how do, let me see what they're saying. How do I prep my team for instant change? Because I can't control that as much as I want to just slowly adapt. Instant change is happening. So what do I do when that's the norm? I can't change. So yeah. So if I understand this question right, it's such a great question. Thank you.
Yeah.
Question really is like, in the times we're in, instant change, it doesn't matter what my brain and my team's brains want, this is what's happening. So yeah. What advice for all of us in that situation, because we really are all in that, whether we like it or
not. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, it's a great question. I'd say a couple of things. The truth is that brains adapt rather than change. So what you have to do is keep the framework there for adaptation to keep happening. So what we're having to do is adapt very quickly, but we have to support the brain to keep doing that. So one of the models that in the book is to connect, be compassionate. That's those two things settle the limbic system down. Then you want to engage the cortex, be curious, and then give people control. So it's connection, compassion, curiosity, control. That is a nice framework for helping brains, diverse brains come together and think. So it's like, right, boom, we've got this big change. Yesterday it was like this, tomorrow it's going to be like that. Whoa, that's a big deal. And then I would have a conversation with the team using that framework about how that feels, not judge people. So the compassion pieces, don't judge the different reactions that you will get. Some people will react like you, some people won't. You'll think some people are cool about it, you know, anyway, you'll have your opinions. Then be really curious about what people think and how this could be handled, and dig into that. And then give them control, because some brains need more airtime, some brains need less airtime, some brains will express themselves in a more introverted way, and so forth. So, but give people control to kind of bring their ideas to the party. And that creates a container that will start to help people bond as they start to think through how do we handle this, and keep doing that. So that would be one thing to do with the team. And then within that, so for example, one of my clients, because she realizes their team's going through a lot of change, she has got one of her team members knowing what the personal circumstances of everybody. So she's got some single moms who are trying to homeschool kids and do a job. She's got some people who are literally living on their own, so they're very lonely and they need more voice time, more face-to-face time, virtual time than some of the other people who are living with their families. She's got somebody making sure that the personal needs of her team are being looked after, so that people feel held emotionally as we work through this. And she's used the four C's, you know, the connect, the compassion, curiosity, control at that level as well, so that people feel held. And that is helping them they're talking regularly. I'm sure most of the people listening are having much more regular meetings, check-ins with their teams than they were before. And so you keep the environment where and all of the time that is going on, your brain is adapting, your brain is adapting, your brain is adapting.
So it's interesting. I just realized I'm going to give you another accidental example. Tell me if I'm off. I have a colleague who owns a family medical practice, right? So he's a doctor, but he owns the practice. There's doctors and nurses in the practice. And he was telling me, I thought it was so brilliant, that one of the things he did during all this pandemic stuff is he actually paid for people to come to cleaning ladies, people to come clean their homes.
Yeah.
And he'd have someone come while they were at work, wash their car.
Yeah.
I was asking him, I said, well, that's awfully luxe. Like, why, you know, why did you do that? I said, well, I just wanted them to feel a little bit taken care of. They're so stressed out.
Yeah.
In other ways, I wanted to remove this.
Yeah.
The same with the four C's. I think what he actually did was what you're talking about. And people kind of, they were given the room to focus and deal. And their brain was like, there's just a couple things removed.
Yeah.
What otherwise would have taken up mental residue.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great example. So that is the connection and the compassion, and it's also allowing space for curiosity, because people, our brains need time to think.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to homeschool and do this and do that, it's tough.
In your house and you got, yeah. Because I asked him why he did it, and he's like, well, I wanted people to have one less thing to have to think about during all
yeah.
this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's a, you know, it's a lovely example tomorrow, because what it does is it takes the first three season of Wanna. So in one action, he's done those first three.
And obviously, I would say, like, for all of us business leaders, I may not be able to afford doing that for my whole team, but there's other ways you can do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
House cleaned or
Yeah.
I know we're kind of getting close to out of time, so I just want to make sure before we wrap up. Number one, when you were writing this book, so again, I'll put the Amazon link later, and when we put on the podcast, we have all the links in the show notes, but what was there anything in your research that surprised you that made you just think, I just would not expected that?
Oh golly. I mean, there's so much of it. So that's why I ended up writing the book. I kind of didn't set out to write a book, but it was like, everybody needs to know this. It's so interesting and so helpful. So it certainly made me a better mom. I have two sons with very different brain sex scores, but it's made me far more able to access their worlds far more effectively and quickly. I think I found a lot of it a relief, actually, because some of the stuff as having a female brain, where I would have thought I was maybe lacking in confidence a little bit, when you look at the brain information and structure, there are some differences there that explain a whole lot of stuff. So, for example, there's a thing called the anterior cingulate gyrus, which is like the worry wart of the brain. It is larger and more active in women, and so women might kind of fret more about what's going on. Is everybody okay? Did I do all right? And actually, that has very solid bioevolutionary roots. And so it enabled me to think about, am I overthinking this and overworking it? Or was there something genuinely that I need to learn from that situation? So that, I think that was the biggest relief for me.
I have a random side question for you that has popped up in my head three times now as we've been talking. So I'm going to ask. One of the things that we often talk about in business is that women are not as big of risk takers, or that we're like, we hold back a little bit more. And part of me is wondering if that myth is false. And what this really is it just is a more circuitous iterative route to get to the risk, so to speak. You know, there's just, I would just love to get your perspective on that. And it could just be to 100%, you know what, tomorrow, no, women are just, we don't take as many risks. I just wonder if that's the band-aid or the cut that we see, but not what's going on underneath.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what I would say is, and this is a short answer, this would be a big, lovely topic to spend more time talking about, but I think the short answer is women take risks differently. And it that has to do with a whole variety of factors. So I wouldn't say that it's that women are more risk averse, but the way they might get to that, those decisions might be different.
Yeah, I have to be honest, it's live and all, but and there's no, well, I have no filters, as you probably would.
Good.
Yeah, not how I roll. But it makes me really think about that maybe I'm kind of, I don't want to say pushing, I don't talk about it that much, but buying into this narrative of, you know, women don't take as many risks, we hold back, we need to be more certain. And that's actually wrong. That actually, to your point, it's different.
Yeah.
You're identifying one way as risk and one way not as risk. And that.
Yeah.
I'm making, a lot of people are making, but I am actually making too.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I think some of the big corporates in the past have got stuck in is trying to make women be the best men they can be. And that's missing the point. You know, the point is we're different. And it's not just about men and women. You know, we're all different. There are some differences that are more typically male and some differences that are more typically female. But once you start to just kind of let go of that, and go, you know, we just have different ways of approaching things. So let's leverage that difference. It's a huge source of competitive advantage. And there's a lot of it sitting already in businesses, not being accessed fully.
I agree. Just imagine. And the thing that always kind of blew my mind about that is, and I talk about this with innovation too, like, why would you silo who you get the most out of?
Absolutely.
Well, whatever, a special team, whether that's, yeah, you know, kind of brain-based or title-based. When you've got all these people the math doesn't make sense to me.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the problems that we're trying to solve for now with the virus and finding new ways of going on in society, that does demand the absolute connect, you know, interdisciplinary teams, as much diversity of thought as possible. If you come at things with a very siloed and very select way, that's going to that's not going to win at the end of the day. And this is such an opportunity to create a new way forward, as well as, you know, find a vaccine and so forth. You really do need the best of all the brains.
Well, and I think, like, and I'm going to wrap up kind of my final questions to you, but I think, like, even if you look at education for a second, I've been getting these emails from our school. I've got two boys, 15 and 11. And for the 11-year-old, the middle school keeps sending me these emails of, like, which would you prefer? One day on, one day off, 1 week off, 1 week on, like, in terms of online versus in school. I don't like any of the options, but that's a different conversation for a different podcast. But what you're saying really makes me realize, well, education, like, that there's an industry, all of them, but that one, just because I'm close to it right now, really needs to think about tapping the power of the diversity of thinking if they're going to solve this, because
absolutely,
your solutions that they keep giving us are not good enough to move forward. They're not. So if you're listening out there, it is not working for me. Okay, so where can people go to connect with you and learn more?
Good. Yeah, thank you. And I really do, you know, I want to be in a big conversation with people. I didn't write the book for selling the book. I wanted to just have a big conversation with the world. So on LinkedIn, you can find me on LinkedIn. Please do link in. Happy to answer questions and talk to people that way. So it's Kate Lanz, L-A-N-Z, on LinkedIn. The website is www.mindbridge.co.uk. And then the book is, and you'll see the link that you post afterwards, but it's available on Amazon. Let's talk. And I really do want people to get the best of all the brains. Boy, do we need it.
Yes, we do. I think my education example was one of many. So, all right, what's your final piece of advice for everyday innovators here on Launch Street?
It would be to really focus on thrive. You know, what do you need to get into thrive in your own brain and body, and how can you cause thrive on purpose to the best of your ability with your teams around you? And your brain in thrive is going to be at its most creative.
Yes. And I really appreciate that what you said earlier. Just, I'm going to wrap that up by saying that you said to do it with intention, not leave it up to chance. And I think that's okay. That's a great way to end this interview. Thank you so much. I feel very,
pleasure.
I feel a little disrupted. Like, I got to think about this a little bit differently, which I think is a good thing.
Good, good. Well, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.